Good evening. James McKenna here with my Science Hour, February 10th, going directly into the show. This week I'll be doing a special on energy. This is a topic I talk about regularly, but tonight I'm going to concentrate on the different aspects of energy because it is so central to our very existence. But I had a chance over a number of past weeks to observe very close up and personal some of the energy facilities of the country. And here's the problem. We have such a distorted energy policy in this country. The problem is that energy is managed by the energy companies who control Washington, and of course we all know that. But I'm going to do a little bit of an analysis, especially of the what I call the myth of alternative energy. And I guess that's the best way I could describe it, because there's enough interest, let's say, or support to give people the image, and of course all of this is image and smoke and mirrors, the image that wind energy will save us, that solar energy or some of the more unusual types of energy collection methods that are being used, they're actually building systems. But in general, like some of the big reflective installations where solar energy is reflected into a tower, well, what's the problem with these? They only work when the sun is up. They don't work at night. Wind is still one of the most powerful sources of energy here, but when you look at the energy fields, the towers set up with the three-blade system that we all see and think of as eco, when we see this or people cheer that an offshore installation is going up, the reality is that these installations really don't provide any energy at all. And the way they're sold is at maximum capacity. In other words, if the wind blew at 30 miles an hour every day, and if all of the towers were maintained and operational 24/7, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, then what would be the energy output of this installation, given that you have some of the smaller ones, maybe 10 or 12 or 14 towers somewhere in that region, you know, a dozen towers on average, up to some of the very big ones where you have literally hundreds of towers. But the reality is that given the cost, there are other factors too, such as it took a lot of electricity, it took a lot of energy to make the metal towers that these sit on. These are not little, they're big. They're tremendously large installations. There's a lot of fabrication involved. The propellers, blades themselves are very large. And it's an extremely efficient system. It takes energy to get it going, which is not a bad thing. But the point is that when you go to one of these installations, not just one, but when you go to many of these installations, the problem is you look at them and you look at the array of wind towers that are set up many times in extremely scenic areas, places that have unbroken vistas of the from centuries past, and then you see these white towers with the white propellers sitting up there, and some people think eco, energy, efficient, helping the human race, solve our oil problems, bring peace in the Middle East. None of these things are true, and that's one of the great problems, and so I call it the myth of alternative energy. The reality is that given the amount of energy that it takes to produce these sites, just to produce the metal parts, just to produce the propellers and move them there and install them, the payback is over many years if they work at full capacity. But the problem is, you look at these installations and those propellers are not turning. I could cite a few. Just as you cross the Iowa border from Minnesota, for example, there's a vast installation I've seen it both from the ground many times and from the air, and rarely, even with a good wind blowing, do you see the propellers turning. In other words, these installations are set up as a token. But there's a bigger view of all of this, in that we simply use too much energy. We use far, far too much energy. We waste too much energy leaving lights on, doing operations after dark that could be done during daylight hours. The amount of energy simply used living, and especially during this amazing winter of 2010 to 2011, the amount of energy that it's taking simply to live in the northern climates. And of course, the vast majority of the population of the world lives in the northern temperate climates, they're called, where they're not so temperate this year. The winter that just does not seem to want to end. And there's another problem, is that a lot of energy goes into agriculture. I also was able to visit a site, and various sites over the past month or so, of areas in remote areas of the world that raise seed for some of the big companies like Monsanto or Cargill. And these fields are protected. They're in remote regions, and they're simply used to raise seed. This is the hybrid seed that goes into American farming. So these are high profit installations. This is not corn to eat or soybeans to eat. It's for seed. And this brings back to the way these companies operate in the very poor areas of the world, the way they use the workers, the way they control farming, for example, which could be used to feed these people, to provide food for the entire population in these areas. Yet those people go into a grocery store with the little bit of money that they earn and buy groceries, just like you or I would in the United States, going to a grocery store. But why would you do that in an area where you could grow far more food than you could ever eat? The grocery store would simply go out of business. There wouldn't be a grocery store. It would simply be fresh produce from the local area. And literally everything, you have to understand too, the American beef industry, unfortunately, I'm talking about the dairy herds, not so much the western herds of cattle, but I'm talking more about the Midwest dairy herds, which have become so concentrated that they use antibiotics to keep the herds healthy. Out in the West, they're spread out more, and they have more of a natural maintenance of health of the herds. But I'm talking about in the Midwest, where farming has become a chemical operation. It's become an operation of high concentration, high population farming. And the chickens, poultry, and cattle have become a very unhealthy breed, unfortunately, because of the need for antibacterial injections and things like that, which keep the use of chemicals to make the meat and the cows, the cattle, the chickens, etc., grow faster. There are some installations where the chickens cannot even walk anymore because they grow so fast. Their legs cannot support the heavy bodies because this all comes back to our use of energy, because we are overusing energy. We probably eat way too much meat in this country, in the United States, but it all comes back to a very simple issue. We're not living according to nature's plan. And that's the summary statement. So this idea that, but see, to keep this myth going, to keep this operation going in this incredible use of energy, you have to convince people that they have to be out there working 40 hours a week, that they have to drive in unbelievable rush hour traffic, stop and go for every day of their lives and have 1 week off when they go on vacation. And that's another thing that I've witnessed for all of my life is the people, Americans going on vacation. They go to a place that they can afford. The rich people go to the very exclusive resorts and the exclusive areas and pay lots of money, eat in restaurants that cost a lot of money per meal, per drink, per whatever, for what the services that they get. And they stay there for a week or two. They have timeshares which last a week or sometimes 2 weeks per year. And they buy into this, and that's their vacation. Then they go back, and they work, and they're clueless as to, they consider their lifestyle good. They probably live in a nice house. The kids go to a nice school. The kids then go to college and then repeat the cycle. This is a problem for the whole world because of the energy use required to live in these areas. In the warmer climates, some people live in air conditioning. So that's a very big drain on the electric generation of electric power. So lifestyle has a tremendous amount to do with the way we use energy and the energy requirements. So in my book, The Diamond Principle, this is somewhat the point of the book, because after writing the other books, The Planet X, Comets and Earth Changes, The Survival of Surviving Planet X Passage, Atlantis to Tesla, The Colburn Connection, the weather book, which talks about the summary of the weather of the solar system and of planet Earth and of all of the planets. That book, by the way, is about a 300-page book. The weather book, the Principia Meteorologia, the Physics of Sun, Earth, Weather. All of these books were written for the general public. That book should have been or started out to be around 600 pages, and I said I can't publish a 600-page book. So the biggest problem I had was whittling it down to 300 pages to have absolutely the core information so that people could read and understand and viable for the general public, a book that really explains the weather of the universe, of the solar system, and ultimately of planet Earth, how to understand this. But what you get out of this overall picture is that there is a tremendous amount of energy in this system, including electrical energy, and it explains that our weather is really 100% or 99.9% caused by electrical conditions in the solar system. That if you only had the solar input from the sun, and this is the, at the core of the energy issue, if we only had the solar radiation or visible light, which most of the light that reaches the ground on Earth is visible light. All of the rest of it, or a high percentage of the rest of the light from the sun, the electromagnetic radiation from the sun, is blocked by our upper atmosphere. So the high energy stuff, the X-rays, the ultraviolet, a lot of that is blocked. And then a lot of the warming light from the sun is blocked, which is the infrared. So most of the light from the sun that hits the surface of the Earth, or the clouds if it's a cloudy day, most of that light is in the visible range. Now, if you had a planet Earth and that was the only input of energy onto planet Earth, you would have a very different weather scenario. You would have weather that was very bland, very mild, and hardly any wind. We would not have tornadoes. We wouldn't have hurricanes. We wouldn't have weather systems that we see. We wouldn't have let's look at the input that comets have brought, the large comets that come through the solar system occasionally. These are not dirty snowball comets, remember, that myth, other myth of modern science that has to be propagated to keep people from understanding the true nature of the solar system. If the light input were the only input that planet Earth had, it would be a very bland weather. We would not have hurricanes, tornadoes, we wouldn't have thunderclouds, we wouldn't. And remember that the water on Earth came from these large comets. In fact, the oil that came from Earth, the coal deposits came because of the tremendous tidal waves that came as a result of the comets coming by, wrenching Earth's system and bringing vast tidal waves. I'm talking 200, 300, 400 foot, possibly 1,000 foot tidal waves in against the shore, where the green matter, the growing matter, was basically taken up, scooped up, and dumped into deposits. So when you look at Pennsylvania coal fields or other areas of the world, the all of these sources of energy, the oil that came in, we know it's described in the Bible, the rain of naphtha, burning naphtha that came in, and with the brimstone. These were the trails, so to speak, of the large comets. And when they came into the atmosphere, they ignited the hydrocarbons that came in the comet tail. Okay, so let's reverse back to my statement that the energy of the solar system, if it only, or the, let's say the energy of planet Earth, the energy supply, if it only depended on input from visible light from the sun, we really wouldn't have any. It would be a very bland planet. We wouldn't have any water. We wouldn't have any mountains. We wouldn't have any oceans or rivers. We might have an atmosphere. Hard to say exactly what the composition would be. But Earth would be a very different place. Every day, Earth takes on more matter. The salt in the oceans came from outer space, built up very slowly over a long period of time. I've talked about this, that the Great Lakes, many of the Great Lakes of the world are freshwater, yet you have inland seas that are extremely salty. What's the difference? Where did the salt come from in some of these, and where and why are some of these lakes pure without any salt at all? Well, the more recent lakes, the Great Lakes and some of the other major lakes of the world, are recent. They have not had time to build up the salt content. We know that the moon has a tail of sodium. NASA says this is being bled off the surface of the moon by impacts of micrometeorites or other small particles, but that's absolutely ridiculous. How come only sodium, if that's the source? How come the other elements of the moon, which are lighter and more susceptible to that kind of bombardment, why are they not in the tail also? Why just sodium? Well, the sodium is coming in by electrical processes. That's the other issue with NASA. All its theories are backwards. NASA would tell you that lightning comes out of clouds and shoots up away from the clouds into the upper atmosphere and then shoots down towards the ground, when that's simply not true. The lightning is actually caused by the being part of the electrical circuit of the solar system. So at any rate, all I can tell you is that the issues with the energy in the solar system are, a lot of it is simply misinformation. So getting back to energy usage, the energy usage has to be in the public sense, in the standard science sense, in the scenario presented to you by the energy companies. They have to present this image that energy comes from some other place. So they have all these distorted theories that oil comes from fossils, decaying dinosaur bones and fern forests. Well, it's absolutely ridiculous. It doesn't account for what you see. It doesn't account for oil 18,000 feet below the surface of the earth in vast pools. It simply doesn't account for anything. Yet they maintain this, and they have to maintain it because the vast majority of the public is too asleep. I don't know if they're stupid. I can't say. It could be because they function on a daily basis. They do a lot of complicated tasks. A lot of them go to work and do complicated tasks. So are they stupid? In a sense, yeah, they're not. They're simply accepting misinformation as a way of life. So that's what's necessary for the oil companies. And that's a point that I make in the Diamond Principle, the new book. That's the point I make, is that it is essential to have bad science. It is essential to have a tier two group at NASA, at the leading universities that get government funding, that these people have to pretend to, or they have to, the entire scenario has to pretend to know what's going on, but in fact presenting bad science as reality. Because the public, the only way you can get the public to do something as ridiculous as what it's doing, this 40-hour work week, where they all drive to work, and most of them, as I've said before, are doing useless work. And even if for the few that are doing real work that actually accomplishes something, what are they doing? They're driving in an automobile, burning it up over a 4 or 5 year period, and then buying another vehicle because they are caught in this 40-hour work cycle requiring you to put all the miles on the vehicle that you do every day, plus burning up that energy. Remember that all of the energy that every one of those cars burns up all across the United States and all across the world, China now, Japan for a long time, industrialized nation, tremendous amount of energy and a tremendous amount of use, and of course in those countries, of natural resources such as fish. Fishing out the ocean. The ocean is under severe pressure of being fished out, of just simply being fished out of existence. China buying up 2/3 of the world food supply in advance with money that they're making manufacturing stuff for the consumer nation, the United States, and then owning the United States. The world is so out of balance, and it's out of balance because it's been allowed to go awry because there has been no management. You have a group of people in Washington whose only interest is serving the mega corporations. Okay, back to the mega corporations and agriculture, for example. A couple years ago, I did a sale of corn seeds, and I had come across, because of the spring flooding, wasn't that the 2008, I believe, spring of 2008, and there was vast flooding throughout the Midwest. Well, in my investigation, I found out that there was a very short supply of original corn stock. It was called the dent corn, yellow dent corn. This would have been the family farm corn seed that you would have found in the 1930s or going back into the 1800s. Yellow dent corn. It's called dent because when it dries on the husk, it forms a little dent up in the top of the kernel. So it's called dent corn. But anyway, I found a pallet of this, literally a pallet, that was of the seed that was remaining in this feed and seed supply place, was going to grind it into chicken food. But the seed had been developed over a course a century or more, but it was being phased out. It wasn't something there wasn't a future for this in American farming. But here's how the quantity that then I purchased that and I sold it worldwide. That seed went to a lot of places, but oddly enough, there were countries where we could not ship that seed. People bought it, for example, in Australia. It was not allowed into Australia. A number of people from Australia had purchased it, but the sale of that corn seed was blocked numerous times trying to get into Australia to various people because of the monopoly that the seed companies have in Australia. But the point is that that was so little of that seed left. Now, here's the reason that seed was even there in the first place. The Chicken Growers Association, let me start over, the Organic Chicken Growers Association, had passed a new law, and they said that they would not allow any form of hybridization or genetic manipulation of corn to be fed to their chickens, and that was required to call it organic. Well, most of the corn today developed for chicken feed had a certain chemical element that was strung into the genetic strain to increase the amount of this very important element that chickens need. And so anyway, that's what was being fed to chickens. It was a better feed for chickens, supposedly. Well, the Organic Chicken Farming Association of the United States said we cannot use that because it's genetically altered. We need original corn. So there was a group of people, and these were professors at Iowa, Wisconsin, and Minnesota, which they started raising this as a farm product for chicken feed for the organic chicken industry. And so they had fields and fields and fields of this planted. They were in the terminal stage where they were actually going to be able to sell this corn on a large scale. So you have to understand, they start out with a little bit, then they grow a year or two for just seed reproducing the corn, and then they get to the point where the fields have enough quantity where they can produce seed and enough to sell to the Organic Chicken Farmers Association. Okay, so that was the situation in 2008, and all of a sudden we had tremendous flooding, and all of those fields flooded out and completely destroyed those crops. I understand a little bit of this ended up in countries like Brazil, South America, but I think some went to China, where it may still be controlled, but I would not guarantee the control of that original product. It would be hard to say if it's in its original form. There might be some traces there. But the point is, the United States, there was one pellet of this seed left, and I bought it and distributed it worldwide in quantities sufficient to guarantee its procreation. And I've said this too, that let's say that we have a short growing season this summer, which and at this point I'm actually expecting because of this unbelievable winter we're having. We already know that there probably will not be crops in England and Europe. Australia has had a crop failure, so it looks like probably the United States is next. But the point is that when the crop failures begin to happen, they already have begun to happen, then the hybrid seed industry will go under in short order, and there won't be any seed left because they're a one season, a Johnny One Note type of seed. They depend on good growing seasons to produce the seed. And so that's why some of these companies like Monsanto and Cargill, etc., have moved to tropical locations to generate their seed. It's no longer done in the United States, or at least in the temperate regions of the United States. They're moving to more temperate climates or more tropical climates where they can produce their seed and then ship it to the United States, where it is then used to sell to farmers. But the problem is if there's a worldwide cooling, the hybrid seed industry could go under literally in 1 year, whereas the original seed corn would live on and eventually would come out the other side and would be able to reproduce and cover the earth once again with real corn. So, but all of the feed that is used for animals comes from the hybrid type of stock. Very little of it actually comes from genetically pure, unhybrid, non-hybrid, non-genetically altered. Very little of the feed that goes to animals in the United States comes from a good source, let me put it that way. Most of it is of the Frankenstein variety. Okay, so back to energy. This all comes back to energy and efficiency of growing corn and the main products, soybeans, which are used for feed for animals, which then keep that industry going. And once again, this does not affect a lot of the poor areas of the world. The cattle are not fed any grain at all. They're fed grass. And, of course, they get a certain amount of grain in the grasslands, but the amount of grain is not, the grain is relatively small, very, very small particulate. The seed in wild grasses is very small compared to, say, wheat or oats or some of the commercial grains that are grown today. So the animals still get grain, but it's a very different source of grain. It's a higher concentrate. It's kind of like when you eat, let's take an example most people can relate to, wild blueberries versus commercially raised blueberries. Commercial blueberries are very large. They look wonderful. They're sold in the store. You can put about 100 in a pint container, and it fills it up, whereas 100 wild blueberries would fill your hand, just the palm of your hand. But the flavor in wild blueberries, they taste like blueberries. The big commercial ones taste like water. They don't have any flavor at all. So they're raised for their size. It's a lot like the corn crops of today. They really don't have any food value. They're raised with ammonia fertilizers, and they really do not have any food value. So the whole situation with energy comes back to our food supply. And as I look at the population, I've gone to some places this past week, and of course, once you do, you're in the tourist population going to vacation, etc. Very, very unhealthy people. Extremely, extremely, and this is on a broad scale. This is not just a few people. You're very hard-pressed when you go through an airport, when you go through a tourist area, when you go through this time of year when the tourism is booming and the people are traveling. You are very hard-pressed to find healthy people out and about. Some, yes, but really not that many that I would call people who've taken good care of their bodies. You see a lot of these people extremely overweight. Their skin is extremely bad condition. They are very out of shape. They walk. They'll take a golf cart to the beach and sit at the beach and take a golf cart back. Extremely, extremely unhealthy population in general, but also very stupid population. It's a population that has no clue what's going on, and they're very easily fooled into thinking that they're doing everything right. How many times have you heard somebody say something like the following? And they're older, and they've raised their kids, and they say, "Well, gee, you know, I've done everything right. I pay my taxes on time. My kids went to the best school. They're now in college. I paid everything off. You know, the daughters have been married, and they go to church every Sunday. They pay their tithes to the church." You know, they've done everything right. They've supported the government. They've done everything right in their life. And then you look at them and you say, no, you haven't done anything right. You've done everything wrong, and you're the cause of the problem of the entire world. The way you live has caused the entire world to suffer tremendously. When you eat that big steak on your vacation, when you pay $250 a night for a room in a tourist hotel, when you drive your car to work every day and you live in you haven't done everything right. You've done everything wrong, and the world has a lot of big problems because of the way you have lived. So the guy that says, you know, retiring and says, "I've done everything right, I've saved my money," and then they say, "Well, gee, why has the stock market fallen and I've lost all my retirement or a good part of my retirement money?" It's like, well, you put it in a, you would have been better off taking it to Las Vegas and gambling. The stock market is it's a fool's game. There's no value there. There never has been. It's only a place for people to make quick money. Once it was a place for investment, but not anymore. The money there is simply not there. People with 401ks, the same thing. That money is not there. What do you think? There's a big box of money in the bottom of the corporate office of that company and your money's sitting there? No. They issue you a piece of paper saying you have value somewhere. But in reality, there's no value any place. The matching part of 401ks that the government puts in. There's no money there. It's a piece of paper saying there is. And when all these people start to withdraw from their 401ks and their retirement accounts, there's no money there for the vast majority of them. And they're just going to be, one day, they're going to be told it's not there. Social Security for the baby boomers. There's a big question as to whether anybody will receive full benefits throughout their lifetime. But at any rate, those are all related to issues of greed, of the imbalance of the use of energy, and the lifestyle that we've been living. There's no way this lifestyle can continue. The world resources have been used up. I just had a very interesting example. Teak is a wood that is used for marine use. It's excellent. It has natural oil in it, and it just withstands years and years of being beaten by the sun. It's a naturally wood that just will last 50, 100 years in the sun, so it's highly prized for especially decking on boats, etc. Back in the 1940s, the country of Burma next to China was an area where teak was very available. Big, big trees of teak. And it was available. They used to put the decks on aircraft carriers, on ships of war, etc., were made out of teak. The entire decking was made of this wood material. It was very cheap, very available. In large pieces, etc. Today, an average piece of teak will cost you hundreds of dollars. Just one board of teak will cost you a lot, and you could never in a million years find enough of it to deck out a huge ship. I mean, you just wouldn't do it. It wouldn't be practical. So there are other materials that are used today. But, all those old ships throughout World War II, etc., were the decks were of wood, mainly teak from Burma. But the world resources are just not there anymore. And to re-raise that, to regenerate the earth, would take, I would say 5 to 10 generations. If we just started letting the forests grow back, due to wildfire and other natural activities, it would probably take 5 to 10 generations for the world's countries to regenerate the forests to where they were at the beginning of the 1900s, before the Great World Wars started ravaging the world resources. And so that's another issue, is resource use, which goes along hand in hand with energy. Once the gasoline engine was started to cut and to move vast amounts of wood, the use of resources was accelerated. But don't underestimate people like the Spanish, who back in the Middle Ages, after the discovery of the New World, so to speak, went and cut down the first cutting of the vast forests of the tropical regions, especially Central and South America, from Mexico on down. Those areas harboring vast areas of immense wood and other natural resources, gold, of course, which had been mined by the indigenous populations. There was enough gold stripped and taken out of those areas, melting down probably just incredible artifacts, enough to be used as the ballast of hundreds and hundreds of ships. The average person today cannot imagine the resources that have gone into warfare and plundering the world's resources by the elite, and it's been done by using this system of banking, taxation, warfare, and keeping the common man down and using the common man's labor at a very minimal cost through conscription into the services of the world, basically to defend the world's issue of borders and the divisions between countries, has allowed these countries to basically ravage the world's resources in the name of defense, which has been another key way of keeping the population at bay. In fact, probably the major method of keeping the population at bay from the beginning of time, that the population of the earth has basically been used as cannon fodder. The best, the youngest, the brightest young men from these societies, and now the women also, being used in military operations for, and a lot of people don't understand that the energy usage and the resource usage by the world's armies and military are enormous. The world can no longer support this level of resource usage, and so the world's militaries have a problem. Tremendous amount of resources being used to keep these military operations going. So at any rate, going back to the entire issue of energy, the use of oil, coal, and nuclear, those are the main sources of energy. It's imperative that they fool the public into thinking that there's a future, that there's green energy coming down the line, or the use of, say, alternative energy in cars. Just remember that, say, an electric car probably uses more energy than a gasoline-powered car. If you took the equivalent amount of energy from gasoline or whatever and turned it into electricity and then put that electricity into an automobile, it's a far less efficient process than just burning the gasoline in the car in the first place. It's a lot cleaner looking, and there again, that's a myth. So what can you fool the public into believing? Once I did a show on just that topic. I forget what the date was, but I did a comparison of using coal, and I took it in terms of boxes of coal per equivalent of a gallon of gasoline used in a car. And I used energy equivalents, and I showed that an electric car is not a very efficient car. Even though they might say, now you see cars coming out with 38 miles to a gallon, little cars. How can it be that a little car can only get 38 miles out of a gallon of gasoline? The original Model T Fords were extremely efficient at cars, from what I've been told. But at any rate, it comes back to lifestyle. You have to fool the public into thinking their lifestyle is okay. It is not okay. The American lifestyle is not okay. The European lifestyle is not okay. But Mother Nature has a way of slowly and in her own good time dealing with these issues. Here's the situation. Right now, we're seeing weather around Europe and England, which may prevent them from having crops this summer. So even though they've developed basically the Western-style life system, and of course England, there's no country on the planet that has profiteering more from the resources of the world than England. Going back through the Middle Ages, England was the strongest navy throughout the entire Middle Ages. They maintained their strength through using the resources of other places. England has no, compared to what it has used, England has zero resources. much like Japan. Japan really doesn't have resources, yet it is an international economic and throughout World War II becoming an international military power. But the point is that England has, there's no country on the planet that has used more resources from other places than England. And, you know, the old saying that the sun never sets on the English Empire, that they had, through naval might and power over the centuries, gathered land all over the world. And, of course, now they are part of the Rothschild banking industry, the king and queen. I always wondered how those people maintained over there. But they're not just the king and queen. It goes far beyond being simply a king or queen or royalty of a little country, little island up in the North Atlantic. So at any rate, but the once again, the use of energy, absolutely incredible as far as the amount of the amount of energy that has gone into maintaining England as a country over the past centuries. And of course now the point is that now England is having a big problem. It's one of the great unannounced and unspoken problems of the world today, that England has a huge problem in that if they do not have a growing season in this country, they will literally overnight become a third world country. And I don't care how many kings and queens you have, that is going to be a problem for the populace. And you do not have a country if the populace is not at least functional. So it will be very interesting to see as we move into the following months what's going to happen with England, because they absolutely depend on that current. And there's no question in my mind that the stopping of that, of the Caribbean current that comes up from the Caribbean to bring warmth, the Gulf current which feeds it warmth in the surface layer of the water, that water going up to England to keep it warm is just not happening. It's not in the water that would feed it for this summer is already moving from the Caribbean area. So we already know that this summer is not going to be a good summer for England. It's simply not going to be a summer in which England is going to fare well. And probably not any crops. That means the meat, the animal production will be way down. So England is going to have some problems. Northern Europe is going to have some problems. That puts the fishing in a very different light, because the fish populations move away from their traditional areas also into warmer regions. Because they're simply dependent on places where it's warm. They're not going to go to where it's as cold, where there's a temperature change. So the entire food supply for that area is going to be affected. At any rate, back to energy usage, the issue of developing large populations in the northern climates has, we've always assumed that there would be plenty of energy available. There's been a myth of peak oil, that somehow we've hit a peak in the oil supply and it's going to go away. It's simply not true. I had a friend who was involved in the oil industry back in the 1990s, and they were laying off geologists. All the major oil corporations were laying off geologists. And so this guy knew a number of them, and so the reason is that the oil companies had already found enough oil all over the world. They didn't need any more discoveries. They knew where the oil was, and they knew that they could never use it. But they had to start this myth of peak power, or that the oils of the world, the supply was going to run out. Into if you have a product and you can convince people that there's a shortage, then you can keep your prices high. there's no need for high oil prices. So it's very bizarre that in an era when the United States, for example, the oil prices are going up and up and up, China is buying oil and gasoline produced in Venezuela for 30 cents a gallon to fuel their enormous energy needs. At a time when the United States is spending anywhere between $3 and $5 a gallon, there are places in the United States, some of the more remote areas, where gasoline is pushing $4 a gallon right now, and it soon will be $5. So how is this? You can see that the oil companies are just sucking the United States dry. The energy companies, and they have complete free rein to do this. But a part of the essential program, and this is something that I talk about, one of the main points I talk about in the new book, The Diamond Principle, the thing that's very obvious is that the oil companies need to maintain this facade, this misinformation of peak oil, and then it costs a lot of money to get the oil, etc. It's simply not true. Chavez, that's why Chavez is viewed as a terrorist. He offers no threat to the United States. They don't have an army that could hold a candle to anything that we have in the United States. So how could he be a terrorist or a threat? Well, he's not. The only way he's a terrorist or a threat is that he can sell oil at 30 cents a gallon for finally produced gasoline, and he can sell it all day to countries as big as China. That's how much oil there is in the world. And he's not sitting on the biggest deposit in the Orinoco flow region of Venezuela. That's not the world's biggest oil deposit. We have a much bigger oil deposit just in Canada, just north of us. Drilling on the north shore of Alaska is not necessary at all. There's no need for that at all. So, okay, after all of this analysis of energy in the United States, the true sources of energy are very much free. They don't come from there's a lot of myth about free energy. That term has really been misused and been bombarded with misinformation, as if you could put a box in the middle of a table and all of a sudden energy is going to flow out of it. Well, no, that's not true. Simply not true. But energy is free. It comes from the sun, electrical energy in vast quantities, and that's why around the turn of the century, the 1900s, when Tesla started developing his tower technology for extracting energy from the atmosphere, that's when they went out, the oil industry, who was starting to capitalize on vast profits from selling energy from coal, from oil starting to come into vogue, etc. Those industries owned by essentially the bankers of the world realized that energy, and of course let's go back to the very beginning of energy. When oil was first discovered as a commodity back around 1200 AD, this was discovered in pools, and it had been used for a long time in the Mideast, but it started to be used as for warfare. Some of the very, very early gifts to kings, etc., was processing oil. They knew about kerosene. They knew about other forms of extracting various liquids from petroleum. And of course back then they found it in pools just on the surface of the ground, like lakes, and so they would take it and they could use it, for example, they would take a big fiber ball of rope and bind it together, and they would either throw it with a launch system or they would use it to for other forms of energy, to burn or to pour over this hot oil, boiling oil, over the side of a castle wall was a way of deterring an army from attacking your castle. So oil was used in many different ways, and it had been refined, and those refined sorts of oils were given to kings. And so that was one of the very, excuse me, one of the very first usages of usage of oil. And but it was found on the lakes in just ponds over in the Mideast. And then they discovered, well, there's more of this if you dig down in the sand a ways. And then they realized that as you go down farther and farther, there was just lots more of it that had sunk into the sand. And, of course, this had come from a large passage of a comet a number of thousands of years earlier, and on many occasions earlier, when large comets came through the solar system. So you see, and this is something I make emphatically point out in the Diamond Principle, is that the oil companies and the astronomy industry, I call it industry because they're paid for by the government, have to maintain this facade, all of these bizarre, ridiculous theories of how oil forms and throughout the solar system, etc., came from fern forests. Well, there's vast amounts of oil and natural gas and methane and all kinds of hydrocarbons on the planet Titan, on the moon Titan of Saturn. Well, there were no fern forests there. Were there? No, I don't think so. So where did all that oil and the hydrocarbons come from? Well, it obviously comes from outer space. But they have to maintain these ridiculous facades. And as you walk through the tourist areas, as you walk through airports, as you walk through the corporate America where people are working in cubicles or in offices around the country, the people are simply clueless. And as I said before, these are the people that would tell you, I go to church, I pay my taxes, I support my government, I'm opposed to terrorism, I think our government is doing a good job, I vote, I go to church on Sunday, I contribute to my church, my kids have gone to a good school and now they're in college and now I'm retiring. And you know, it's just, these are the people that are clueless. The United States population in general that drive to work every day, that pay interest on a loan on a car that burns up before that loan is expired and then go out and buy a new one, or buy a house that mainly pay interest for the life for 30 years, on a 30-year loan, absolute, on a very much overpriced house, absolutely ridiculous. At any rate, about a half a minute left of the show, what I encourage people to do, what should you do? Live a lifestyle of reserved amounts of energy. Start to live your life apart from the norm. And become prepared, because there's a vast amount of information coming in indicating that you very soon are going to have to take care of yourself. So that's why my webpage, the things I sell there are for your future security and well-being, and if you only had those things, you would be very well set. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And by the way, the webpage, JMCC, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo.com, JMCCSCI.com. This is James McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.